for.
Alright, so what how's it roll with some points? What did we learn?
You're small.
We learned that there's two groups. There's two groups, right?
The up and the down.
Correct. Oh yes, excellent. There's two groups. There's the group of four, and then there's your small.
Small's parasamadhi.
Your small, yes, your small intermingles with parasamadhi. We say the fortunes of all the nations in the world except for Yishmael are Tali and Klai Yisrael. That if Klai Yisrael is down, they're up. And if they're up, Klai Yisrael can't be up. And when you see them falling apart, their Malchus falling apart, so it's a sign that Klai Yisrael is about to go up. But that's only with the four nations. Yishmael is independent. Even if Klai Yisrael goes up, Yishmael could stay up. And this is mamash. This is in Yanim of Yom Yom. Do you see the other nations going down? They're all plotting. There's not a single nation that's not plotting. Maybe China.
Russia.
What?
Russia
is it looked like Russia was coming back up. I just heard the Putin cover man. He's very, very sick. He's like the last remnants of the communist era. He's like the last communist alive. He's very, very sick. The Chara doesn't work that way. You know, once they go down, they stay down. You don't find that the Greeks came back. You don't find that the Babylonians came back. What?
The Germans came back.
The who?
The Germans.
Jeremy came back.
Germany.
I think it's Jeremy. I didn't hear it.
Now you can hear it.
then it will probably bother me.
I got a little stitched.
Thank you. Yishmael is very much a part of current events. You can't separate anything from Yishmael. A bunch of built in Michigan. And they're filling the entire world. The world's afraid of them. They're afraid to antagonize them. They're afraid to say anything. Chas v'shalom to offend a Muslim. Because if you offend a Muslim, he might blow himself up and take you with him. It's very scary to get blown up. So you want to be very gentle with them.
That was always not just present day. No, I'm saying the idea
of being...
There was a time when the Muslims were content to stay within themselves. I mean, they have their periods. But if you go back a couple hundred years, they conquered the whole Arabian Peninsula. But the Teva of Yishmael, the Teva of a Muslim, first of all, they have a Teva they don't build. Well, this we know. They don't build. They have a Torah that they talk and talk and talk, they don't do. And these are all the four ships that come in the Torah. Yishmael, what is Yishmael? Yishmael is that they like listening to themselves. They have a strong affiliation with the Kayach of Shmir. They talk and they talk and they talk and they talk and they do absolutely nothing. The definition of reality for a Yishmaeli, how do they define reality? They define reality that that's what they said. They create reality with their Dibra. They say something, and that's real. You can't argue, you can never argue with the Yishmaeli. Because the reality keeps shifting. You know, they're right, because they said that this is the way it is, you know. They say that the Jews are murderers. They say that the Arabs are peace loving people. They say that the Israelis target civilians. They say all the things that they say. Let's not fool ourselves. They don't view themselves as if they're lying. They're not capable of telling the truth. They have no contact with reality. But they think, they really, really think, they're really convinced that they're telling the truth. Because they said it. So if I said it, it must be true. And this is Yishmael. Now, my Rebbe Ramesha once spoke about the Arabs, the first Yishmaelim that I mentioned, the Chazal, are the ones that visited Avraham Avinu. So before they went into his tent, he had them wash their feet. Because the Yishmaelim worshipped the dirt under their feet. And he didn't want them to come into his tent with their Avodah Zarah.
Could he be Yishmaelim before Yishmael?
We wouldn't call them Yishmaelim. But when we're talking about nations were preceded by what the roots would cause them to come into being. For example, the four nations, Babylonia, Barsamada, Yavan, and Edom, so they were present in the time of Avraham Avinu. They're the ones. They're the four kings who fought the five kings. Amraphel Melch Shinar. Amraphel, the king of Shinar. Shinar is Babylonia. Ayok Melch Elasar. Elasar. You know, where's Elasar? Who has the star of Elasar? Okay, we'll lose that one. But Ayok Melch Elasar. Is Elasar, it's Persia. These are, you know, the four kings. They were the kings of Babylonia, Persia, Greece, and Rome. Tidal Melech Goyim. Tidal was the king of Goyim. What's Goyim? He's the king over all the nations. That's Rome. So they preceded Rome. And they're still called Al-Shem Rome because they have the culture. These four nations were in existence from the first days of creation. Four cultures. Four divergent cultures. And then there were a lot of people in the world, and you had these cultures flying around. And then there was someone by the name of Nebuchadnezzar that he grabbed. There was a certain culture that appealed to him.
So when did they start? If they were always around, even before they had a name?
The potential for these dynasties emerging was around from the first days of creation, and then people make their choices. A lot has to do with their nature. They're gonna choose to hold on to a belief system that's close to their nature. Like if they enjoy destroying but they based on Megdishes, if they get kicked out of that, so then they'll grab that one. You know, if they like killing out Jewish bodies, you know, there's four ways to oppress the Jews. You could destroy their place of holiness, you could destroy their bodies, you could destroy their minds. There's four ways, or you could do everything together. So there's different nations, they make choices. And the choices are based on their particular souls. They have souls, they have certain natures. So they bowed down to the dust of their feet, so everyone wanted to wash their feet before they came into the house. Isn't that ridiculous? What does it mean to deify the dust under your feet? Does it actually mean what we think it means? That some people make these nice little statues with eight arms? And the Yishmaelim, they like dirt. They're into dirt. Is that what it means? There's a certain lack of sense to such a thing. And especially if you understand what Avodah Zarah is, you know. They worship the dirt. And it's any dirt. You know, if you're going to make an Avodah Zarah, so then you're going to worship a specific dirt. You're going to designate a specific dirt. This dirt, I'll put it in a cup, and I'll call a cup of dirt. And that'll be my Avodah Zarah.
I heard that before 5 times,
right? So my Rebbe explained that when Chazal say that they worship the dirt under their feet, that's a fancy way of saying that they worship themselves. It means wherever my feet are, that's where I am. That's my God. I'm standing on this dirt, so this dirt's my Avodah Zarah, because that's where I'm standing right now. If I move and go to a different dirt, That takes my way to Zohar, because that's where I'm standing then. Chazal are giving us a clue. They're cluing us in. He's washing off the dirt of their feet. He's telling them, Avraham Avinu was spreading Amunah. He was telling them that they're not the God, let's explain this. Let's develop this a little bit more, and then we'll get back to the washing of the feet. We'll do this in order. They believe in God. They're monotheistic. They believe in God. And they believe in the same God that the Jews believe in, the God that created heavens and earth. And what's the difference between their belief system? The Jews wait to hear what God says, and when God says something, they hear it as God's will, and they perform it. The Yishma'elim say what they say is God's will, and God wants what they say. And then they perform it. So Avraham Avinu, he was fighting against that. He was combating that. Don't bring your dirt, wash your feet off is a symbolic act. That's not the way you think it is. God is not wherever you are. God is not waiting for you to decide, to make a decision. And you're going to notify God what you decided. And then you're going to run, he's going to run the world the way you say it. So you wash off your feet. You got the understand? You wash off your feet. That's a symbolic act of saying that God is not the dirt under your feet. That's the type of Yishmael. What we're seeing now with Yishmaelim, okay, so that's the nature of Yishmaeli. The nature of Yishmaeli is mainly in the realm of talking. And they're very content just to talk. They don't have to do anything. Yishmael. So God is talking. They do nothing. And that's the nature of Yishmael. But to contrast that with Esav, the word Esav means Ayin Sin, Vav. So the root of Ayin Sin, Vav is similar to the root of the word Asiya, Maisa. Esav does. And nothing can stop Esav from doing. And that's what he does. He just does. Don't get in the way. Esav does. Yishmael doesn't do. He talks. They have their water pipe, their hookah, their tent, their goat. They're happy. They don't build. They have a goatskin tent. And they are very much like the Druze. What we're seeing today, the terrain, what we're seeing today, are two nations coming together. Now exactly where the link was made, but the exact where the link is, I can't tell you. What we're seeing today is that there's another nation. They see a Yishmael that they're wild. Whatever they say, that's reality. That's a very wild thing. That means reality is constantly shifting. That means there's no form. It means you can never pin them down. You can't have negotiations with someone whose reality keeps shifting. You have one day, you agree, you write things up, you say, okay, let's go on. And then the next day, they have a totally different understanding of what happened the day before. And then you tell them, we just discussed this yesterday and we agreed on this. No, we didn't. We did. No, we didn't. I'll play you the recording. Our recordings can be faked. A little testimony. They lie. We never did it. You can't. And this is, we see it. You can't negotiate with Yishmael. They're wild. They have no form.
What'd you say?
They have nothing that you can't pin them down. There's another nation, the nation is known as Amalek. And Amalek, they don't content themselves with just talking and smoking water pipes. Amalek exists for one reason. They see their purpose in life is to eradicate the B'nai Israel. If they don't do that, then they consider their coming into this world pointless. And they really believe that. Yeah. And there's Amalekim all around us. We don't necessarily know who they are. The it's assumed that the Germans, you know, were Amalekites.
Where did that come from?
Well, the Gemara talks about Germania. Germania, it says, Shemalehim Yaitzim Achriven Kol Olam. That if they ever get out, they're going to destroy the whole world. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, it talks about Germania. That they're shackled, they're held in by all kinds of checks and balances, that the Germania people, whoever they are, they're held in, they're contained. But if they ever break the containment, they're going to get out, they're going to destroy the whole world. And this is in the Gemara. And the Vilna Gaon, hundreds of years after the Gemara, the Vilna Gaon said almost 200 years ago that that's Germany. Germania sounds like Germany, but that wasn't the only reason why he said it. And he lived way before the Churban. So that's one of the sources. There are certain tchunas. There are certain tchunas and nefesh that they had. That when they were in power, they were the Ubermenschen. They were the Superman, and the Jewish people and all the other people they had on the list, the Gypsies and the mentally ill and the homosexuals and all the people on the list. The non-Aryan members of mankind, of humankind, they were all subhumans. They're different classes. I think the British, by the way, they considered them human beings. Hitler could not figure out why the British were opposing him. Because they're kindred. There's a link between, you know, they're kindred people. He considered them human beings. He considered the British human beings. He very much wanted
allies
with the British. But it wasn't meant to be. It wasn't meant to be. Well, he got along very well with Neville Chamberlain, the twit. He got along very well with him. Okay. So Amalek sees themselves very much that they have one reason to exist, and that's to rid the world of Jews. And that's all. I mean, they harness every power that they have, every faculty, every talent, to rid the Jews, and if they don't manage to do it, they're a failure. And no other nation is like that. There's other nations that hate the Jews. They hate the Jews because they're jealous of us, because we're so smart. They hate the Jews because we have land that they want from us. They hate the Jews because we're better than them. All kinds of reasons why we hate them. But if they don't manage to kill the Jews out, they still have a life. And Amalek's not like that. What we're seeing today is a synthesis, a joining together of Yishmaelim and Amalek. They have the wildness of the Yishmaelim. They don't build. They don't do anything constructive. And you can't pin them down, and there's no way of predicting what they're going to do, and all they do is live in destruction, and they don't. And at the same time, they're filled with a tremendous desire to kill themselves in order to take us down. And this is something which we're seeing today. They're suicide bombers. And they're willing to die in order to take us down because life is not worth living as long as we're alive. That's not a Yishmael characteristic. That's Amalek. And that's what's happening today. So you have the wildest of all nations coupled together with the one that has the focus. The one reason to live is to kill Jews. And that describes the world today. You can't reason with them. You can't negotiate with them. How do you negotiate with someone that's willing to kill himself and his wife and his children in order to get you? How do you deal with something like that? And they're not going down. The other nations are going down. Bavol, Pars, Mada, Yavan, the Einiklach of these nations are all going down. The United States is totally falling apart. It's not a Malchus. The nations are impotent. They're all impotent. But the strong nations are North Korea. That's the power of the world. Is North Korea. That's the power in the world. I mean, where in the world do you see power? Where in the world do you see power? Even Cuba's falling apart. What's with Cuba? It's a joke. Cuba was the one nation that was going to attack the United States. Even Cuba's falling apart. Cuba's falling apart. France falling apart. England is falling apart.
Canada.
Yes, there is Canada.
Suck. Alive and well.
Go to Canada now. Every third person is a Muslim.
Yeah, but it's different there.
Yeah, the Muslims over there attack Jews.
No.
Yes, they do. It's starting. Maybe more in Montreal than in Toronto. Montreal, they're more xenophobic.
Right, I went there. Yeah, that's because it's like...
That's because, yeah, they're very...
France is also, like, right. The worst place in Europe.
It's more Montreal. In Montreal, there are demonstrations, pro-Hamas demonstrations.
Yeah, I know.
But yes, there is. Toronto, it's interesting that of all the nations of the world, the one with the one with the shred of decency is Canada. Not the United States. It's Canada.
I don't know if it's the United States as a whole or just the political...
The United States is turning away from Israel. It's just a matter of time. They've already started. They're preparing it. It's just a matter of time. The insults, the lack of respect. It's just a matter of time. Hillary will do it. Yeah, Obama will hand it off to Hillary. She'll do it. She will do it. What we're seeing is Chazal coming to life. So what do we do? That's it. That's right. So that's Chazal a little bit. So what do we do? What do we do? What we do is we learn some more morals. Morale pointed out that there were two dreams, two visions. One vision by Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel. He had a vision. And he saw this big... Hold on a second. Nebuchadnezzar saw a tremendous statue made out of different materials and metals, and it was in the shape of a man, and it had four parts to it, and each one represented one of the four great nations. Daniel had a vision. He saw four creatures come out of the sea. Each one was ferocious creatures, the lion, the panther, what?
Wolf, bear.
No, that's Bechleikis, whether it was a wolf. The bear. The bear or the wolf, either the bear or the wolf. And the weird thing, the nondescriptive animal. Nebuchadnezzar saw the nations as a person. And Daniel saw the nations as an animal. So the moral says, because that's, Daniel saw the nations for what they really are. They're animals in the form of people. And Nebuchadnezzar saw them as people because he thinks he's a person. And if you have an animal in the form of a person, and he thinks he's a person, you don't argue with him. Let him be. You don't argue with him. That's the way they view themselves. He says, you can't fight animals on the physical level. You can't do that. You're not going to win. Because in the physical level, there's no person that's stronger than an animal. The brute force of an animal is powerful. Go fight an elephant. Go find one person in the world who could fight an elephant. I meant smart people. Find a smart person that's going to fight an elephant. Won't find a single person who has any intelligence that's going to fight an elephant. You can't fight an elephant. Hippopotamus or rhinoceros. They're very strong. They're strong beyond the strength of any man. So you can't fight them physically. You can't fight them physically. Anybody that tries, or anybody that believes that you could try, everyone that believes that you could do it with a police force or an army or with a missile system, or, they're animals. They're animals. There's no way that you're... Anything physical that you come up with, or that that the Israeli government comes up with, or that the American government supplies to the Israelis. There's no way that that's going to be that's going to equal the strength of the nations of the world, because they're animals. Animals are wild. Animals are, they have a certain force to them. It's an overpowering force. They're going to win. So how do you fight an animal? You fight an animal from the point of a person, from the perspective of a person. You know, and elephants are captured, and they're put in zoos, or they're trapped, or they're killed. So how do you do that if they're stronger than you? How do you manage them? How do you overcome an elephant? How do you put an elephant in the refrigerator? You open up the refrigerator, put the elephant in, close the door. How do you put a giraffe in a refrigerator?
You first take out the elephant.
Yeah, you open up the door, take out the elephant first, then put the giraffe in. If you don't take out the elephant, you won't be able to put the giraffe in. Nah, come on. One elephant in a refrigerator. One elephant, one refrigerator. You can't put three elephants in a refrigerator. What are you thinking? The way man overcomes a beast is through seichel. You invent... How do you kill a black elephant? With a black elephant gun. How do you kill a white elephant? You paint the elephant black and you shoot it with a black elephant gun. You have to use your brains. You have to use your seichel. Now, there's an advantage that the seichel has over brute strength. You know, they're two different playing fields. Brute strength, no matter how strong that elephant is, or the cow, or whatever animal you're trying to overcome, there's a limit to how strong they could be. All strength, all physical strength is limited. The kayak of intelligence, the kayak of the mind, has no limit. There's no limit how smart you can become. There's no limit. There's no limit to how much information you can gather. There's no limit to how many skills you can learn. There's more and more and more and more and more. You can do it better and better and better and better and better. There's no limit. So if you're going to descend to the level of the physical and you're going to fight animals on the physical level, you will lose. So don't do that. Don't do it. But if you view yourself that you're the person and they're the animal, and you have to use your brains, so then you will win. Because you could draw on something that's unlimited, and as much strength as they have, that's limited. So I'm sure you might have studied some form of martial arts. You could have a little kid. They teach kids this tall. You have a little kid, you know, a little 7-year-old kid. He could take down someone because he uses his brain. Let's go. Let's continue. He says the biggest threat, the Maharal says that the biggest threat that we face, being amongst the Gentiles, being amongst the Goyim, is in our own personal lives, when the physical part of ourselves becomes our focus. A Ben Yisrael has a guf, and he has physical needs, and there's a physical component to the person. A Ben Yisrael also has a neshama al-yayna, which is unlimited, and there's a spiritual component to the person. The Maharal says this in Pirkei Avos, that a guy is a person and a yid is a person. So what's the difference between a guy and a yid? A guy has a guf and a guy has a neshama. A yid has a guf and a yid has a neshama. What's the difference between a guy and a yid? The difference is a yid, his identity is that he is a neshama. The guf is there for the neshama to accomplish what it was created to accomplish. The guf is a tool in the hands of the neshama. The neshama is not complete without the guf. The guf is the helpmate of the neshama. The identity of a yid is neshama. The guf is a necessary part of it. But the identity is the neshama. A Jew identifies as a soul. And by a Gentile, they have a guf, they have a neshama. They are a guf, but a guf without a neshama doesn't do too much. In fact, a guf without a neshama is dead. So they view the neshama as what enables the guf to live out its life as a guf. It serves the guf, and it gets the guf what it needs, and it does what it has to do in order for the guf to get what it needs. That's what the Maharal says in Pirkei Avos. The Maharal in Pirkei Avos complements the Maharal in the Sefer of Nei Mitzvah. A Jew is a human being, and a Gentile is an animal in the form of a human. Because by a Gentile, the main part of him is the physical. If a Jewish person becomes like that, Chas v'Shalom, we don't live in the Midbar surrounded by angels and clouds and Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't live in Eretz Yisrael with his Nevuah and his Nevi'im who talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and there's a base of Migdash where 10 miracles happen every day and the laws of time and space are suspended. We live among the Goyim, which means we live among people that their soul is there to serve the body. And this is very evident. If you know Goyim, you know this. It's very evident. If we become like them, so we're in danger. Because when they try and kill us, we're on their level. And if we're going to be on their level, we're going to lose. So it's pikuach nefesh. It's not just musar. It's pikuach nefesh for us to get in touch with our own true inner nature, that we're not bodies and we're not sophisticated monkeys. We're neshamas. We are angels. We're angels who have a body because we have some mission to do with our bodies. Angels don't have that mission. So we do. But we have a mission. And our mission is our souls to combine with the body to do that, to perform that mission. So that's a very big danger. And it's, right now we're not discussing how many mitzvahs you do, how many various mitzvahs, that's also, that's very important. Do mitzvahs, stay away from various. Various are not good. Mitzvahs are good. Pick mitzvahs. But that's not enough. It's not enough. We have to know what we are. It's not enough. We have to know what we are. We don't fight them on a physical turf. There's a lot of this going around when there's the terrible kidnapping of the three young Kedoshim. Remember that? So many things happened since then. So there was a lot of words flying around. And some kids actually did it. They kidnapped an Arab and killed him. They actually did it. They're putting all of Klal Yisrael and Sakana by doing that. They're fighting them on the same level. We cannot fight them the same way they fight us. We're going to lose. Yeah, make a cheshbon. They kidnap us and kill us. We kidnap them and kill them. Then they do it back to us. We do it back to them. Who's going to run out of people first? 7 million Jews, 50 million Arabs. Who's going to run out of people first? And they're willing to kill, they're willing to kill 6-7 million Arabs to get us because, they link with Amalek. Who's going to run out of people first? It's like when you ever play war. So you start out with 26 cards each person. But then when the guy wins, because it's like a double triple war, and he puts down a queen, you put down a two, and then you lose everything. You got the four cards. He's got 48 cards. He's going to win. There's a certain point in the number. He's going to win. They have a lot more people. They have a lot more people to sacrifice. We can't afford to lose it. We can't fight them by kidnapping them because they kidnap us. It's just, it's not wise. They have more people. They also have more kidnappers. They have a lot more kidnappers. How many kidnappers do you think we have?
At least four at this table.
This is... So how do you fight them? You fight them on a higher level. You know, when a Moloch attacked Klal Yisrael in the desert, so Yeshua, he fought them. But you have to defend yourself, you know. I don't mean when somebody comes at you with a gun, you take out a Tehillim. Someone comes at you with a gun, you run. Or if you could take them out, you take them out. Probably you should run. But either way, your physical response is called for when someone comes to attack you. But Moshe Rabbeinu was on the mountain, and Yeshua was down in the valley. And Moshe Rabbeinu, his hand spread out to Shemayim, and Yeshua was winning. He was fighting a Moloch on a higher level. Morel talks about this balance between body and soul. You know, we're in the rainy season. We say, Masha Baruch Merit Hagashem. So there's a Chassidish of art. Masha Baruch, you're supposed to bring back, to restore the Ruchnius, the Merit Hagashem, and push the Kashmiris down. Masha Baruch Merit Hagashem. The same balance you have between Yaakov and Esau that we spoke about, you have between the body and soul. He talks about the aging process. He says, "Kasha yishbitol lagashmi." When you suppress the gashmias, I mean, you need a certain amount of gashmias, but you only take what you need, and you don't worship gashmias. You suppress the gashmias. So then nothing stops the seichel from shining. Because the relationship between them is the more focus you give the gashmias, the less you understand with your seichel. But seichel nishabovad, when a person loses all his power, all his strength, he still has a seichel. Kamela is zikna, just like when you grow old. When a person is old, it's called a kayach haguf. The kayach haguf is... There's people that are old, they could barely walk. They could barely walk. They're in a wheelchair. They can get up from the wheelchair and walk a few steps. That's, you know, they could barely walk. V'yishchazak oz kayach hasichli. When a person gets older, and his physical powers get weaker, so then he gets smarter. Because what stops a person from having an unlimited seichel from the moment of birth? Because from the moment of birth, a person's filled with so much physical potential. He's very strong. There's a lot of physical life in a newborn child and a young person. You have all these kaychas. It's, you know, one of the things that makes it so hard on people your age, it makes it hard, it's impossible. What makes it so impossible is because you have very strong physical kaikas. You have a lot of energy. You have a lot of strength. You haven't been broken. You're like a guy like me. I said, you have all kinds of, you know, there's a rage. There's a strength, there's a power. And that suppresses the powers of the mind. And that's why teenagers do stupid things. That's, you know, that's a bit of psychoanalysis. That's why teenagers do stupid things. Because the physical part of you is so strong that you focus on it. You can't ignore the physical part of you when you're at an age that it's very strong. And when you focus on it, then you don't focus on the wise things in life. So what's the solution? The solution is you got to get past this time period in your life with as much growth and as little damage as possible. Don't give up, you know. Grab as much as you can and make it past it until you get it gets easier when you get older. You're not going to solve all your problems when you're a teenager. Or when you're 20 or 21 or 22 or however old you are at this table. The Maharal says that when a person gets older and he has no strength anymore, his seichel gets stronger. An 80-year-old man is called a gibor. He's called higia l'gvuras. Why is an 80-year-old called a gibor? Because he's so weak physically that his mental abilities are tremendous. It's a direct proportion. He's an 80-year-old man. Higia l'gvuras. Because physically he's a non-entity. He can't do anything. A guy that's 80 years old, if he's walking around, he's fortunate. He can't carry his own suitcase. I'm just saying, 80-year-old man, what's your picture of an 80-year-old man? The best case scenario in his 80s.
Golf.
That's all about it, right?
All day.
Not bowling. The ball's too heavy.
Water aerobics.
You can't eat anything, right? Everything they eat is bad for them, right? They're always going to get their levels checked and the medication and the operations. And if they fall, then they don't get up again. Very fragile. And they're in bed. The physical body is bottled. It's gone. It's called, but they're called a gibor.
Start losing their mind at some sort of age.
That's not a gibor. Talmid Chachamim generally don't. I mean, they don't. Generally don't. The Gemara says that the Kol Zman Shemashkinim, as they get older, their mind gets better and better.
So what about the ones who did?
I don't know. We don't know the reasons for things. I don't profess to know the reasons for things. That could be a punishment. It could be a kapara. I really don't know. But the Derech HaTeva, right now we're talking about Derech HaTeva. Derech HaTeva is when someone gets weaker, the mind takes over. Because when you're young, he says it. Ki chaimra adam b'yaldusai, the person's physicality when he's young, gaivra al-sikhli, overpowers his mind. The physical forces within the person overpower the mind, and the mind can't think straight. A young person can't think straight. But when you're older, so in the physical body, lets the mind fly. It lets go. The physical power, it lets it go. And the mind could soar. V'nishar seichel b'vad. And u'ke'ilo hoya ha'adam kulei seichli. An old person, a person whose physical part of himself is battle, ke'ilo hoya ha'adam kulei seichli. It's as if the person is made of, is composed of mental energy. We'll continue with Yisrael next time, but so that's why in the past 75 years already, it's been one long story. They win, we lose. Because they're animals. Because they worship the body. Because they look at themselves like they're physical beings. Because the neshama of theirs is only there to be a slave to the physical. That's why they win. So that's a good reason why they're doing it. They worship the body because it leads them to success. They don't care about Mashiach and Olam Haba. They win, we lose. Mission next week, we'll talk more about women.
I don't understand how Bible can be a bad influence on us.
All they cared about was killing us.